How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show on this... Oh, my God, it's cold today. Minus 42. Hang on, let me check and see if we went one lower at 9 o'clock, the official wind chill at the airport. Ah, we're back up to minus 41. You probably felt that if you were outside. Gone from minus 42 to minus 41. It's chilly out. Yeah. Going to be chilly for the entire day today. Slightly better tomorrow, and then suddenly on Sunday it's going to be plus one somehow.
Felt bad with all the hamsters looking for whatever they were doing, and the one fella passed away in Quebec. Hey, is that accurate?
The groundhog hamsters.
Not hammy, but I just felt like...
Hamster is not a part of the groundhog world.
And hammy hamster it was, because he had all friends, had chipmunks.
He drove his own toy car.
I didn't get enough chance. I'm sure you guys covered it, but were they aware that the fella had passed away?
Martin Willie?
They actually pulled him out of the hole, Quebec fella.
The Quebec groundhog died on the first.
You didn't say that, Jared?
I totally missed that.
Okay, yeah. And do you know Hammer? Like, did they pull him out of the hole? He was dead, or were they aware?
Well, I don't know the details, but I figure when they went and knocked on the door and checked in on him, making sure he was good to go.
It's not like yesterday morning
they went in and tried to pull him out.
Is that a sign?
Okay, we've got a guest standing by who wants no part of this conversation.
I apologize. Sorry.
All right. We'll get back to the Troy Mann situation coming up in a few minutes, but this is a big part of a big weekend and a big week ahead for the CFLs. We're just around the corner from free agency. And, of course, the Red Blacks have been taking care of business, re-signing free agents. But as of this weekend, they and the other eight teams can start talking to other teams' free agency, the so-called legal tampering period. And joining us to talk about it is Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation. How are you doing this morning, Justin?
Doing well, guys. I don't want to break up the groundhog hamster chipmunk party, though. That's hilarious.
It was a hamster.
Cold, where you are? Where are you, Justin, by the way? Where are you situated?
I'm in Toronto right now. So right. It's not quite as cold as where you guys are, but minus 20, I think.
All right. I'll segue and say things are heating up in the Canadian Football League. So let me get this straight, so it's just so I'm accurate. As of noon on Sunday, CFL teams can start talking to other teams' free agents, and while you officially can't sign them, as in a contract, you can come to agreements with other teams' free agents. Is that correct?
That's right. You can start talking, and you can essentially come to agreement. That can't be official until actual free agency when it hits, because there's a couple days after the legal tampering window that the team who has your pending free agent rights can match that offer, and you can talk with them. So that's how this next little bit will play out.
All right. And the actual day of free agency is Valentine's Day, which is a curiosity in and of itself, but it promises to be a very interesting weekend. So before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of the Red Blacks, do you think that starting on Sunday, like, are we going to hear some pretty big names potentially agreeing to contracts and potentially be on the move as soon as Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening?
It's possible. I don't know if we'll hear about it that quickly. I mean, guys, if we're being honest, people are talking right now. You're probably not supposed to say that, right? But people are getting an idea and back channeling and doing all that kind of thing. So, you know, I think we could start to hear next week that there's stars that have multiple offer situations and some guys that do agree to terms who already know that they're not going to be back with the team that their contract is expiring with. So I think some of that stuff will start to happen as the week plays out.
Behind the scenes, how many agents are involved in such a small league, in essence kind of controlling what's going on?
You know, that's a great question. It's a really small amount. You know, it's about, I would say, a handful of agents that are the main ones in this process. You have the odd agent that has a couple of guys, and especially American-wise, there would be a couple of agents that might have a couple guys who were in the NFL and then now have come up to the CFL. But really, it's about a handful. There's one agent in particular who has a bunch on the Ottawa Redblacks. His name is Fred Weinrock. He has Jeremiah Masoli, for example. He has like over 100 guys in the CFL. So there are a handful of agents that are somewhat similar to that. Weinrock has the most, but there are a few like that. Rob Fry would be another guy. He's Nick Arbuckle's agent, for example, to throw out a name. He also has Jake Mayer. So he has a lot of guys in the CFL. So those are two of the major ones in the league right now.
And you mentioned two different agents there, but my understanding is that
one agent controls most of the quarterbacks. Is that accurate?
It's a little bit different now. That used to be the case,
okay.
And that was a guy named Dan Burtley, but now the quarterbacks are kind of being split up between, I would say, multiple guys. There's probably even a handful of agents that have all the starting quarterbacks, whereas it used to really be Dan and his partner, Paul Brown.
Okay, we're talking to Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation. CFL free agency legal tampering begins on Sunday, so just a couple of days away. So there's kind of an overarching storyline to all of this, Justin, in that nobody's quite sure what's going on with ownership in Montreal, and a lot of their big-name players who were free agents kind of have said, I guess I'm up for grabs because there doesn't seem to be anybody interested in signing me here, even though I'd like to re-sign Eugene Lewis and Trevor Harris being two of the bigger names. So what's your read on the situation, and is it as dire as it seems to be in Montreal?
Those are two of the main ones, and I think they're two separate cases. So let's start with Trevor Harris first and foremost. I think the issue there is that Gary Stern, the minority owner, who's been very vocal and we know tweets a lot, even though it's poor grammar, we try to decipher it and figure out what he's trying to say. He hasn't said much in the way of praise about Harris. Now, I don't think that's something that Harris necessarily cares about, but Stern has been open about praising Vernon Adams Jr., didn't want to trade Vernon Adams Jr., nixed a trade to the Edmonton Elks last year, and then when he was taken out of a deciding role, let's say, then they actually were able to trade him to BC. So I think that's a little bit of a factor in what's going on with Trevor Harris, but I think the actual bigger factor with Harris is the fact that he has some leverage, right? But it wasn't too long ago where he didn't have that leverage and he was trying to find a spot, and he went to Montreal and was going to compete with Vernon Adams Jr. and see if there was a way where he could become the starting quarterback. Now he knows that he has some leverage because the Saskatchewan Roughriders are desperate for a proven high-end starting quarterback, and Trevor Harris is arguably the only one that could come free in free agency. So I think Harris and his agent know that, and not that they want to break the bank and make it so that the Alouettes can't compete from a salary cap standpoint and be able to sign other players, but they want to get what they believe is their value. So I think that Harris has no issue. You guys have seen him do this before in the nation's capital, potentially deciding to leave if he feels like he's not getting his worth. Geno Lewis, I think, is a bit of a different case in the sense where, from what I've been told, even though I've been talking to Geno Lewis directly, he said he hasn't asked the Alouettes for this much money, but in CFL circles, there are people that will tell you that Lewis wants over $300,000. And that's realistically, even though he's a great high-end CFL All-Star caliber receiver, I don't think that's going to happen on the salary cap this year. Kenny Lawler got that kind of money last year from Edmonton because they struck out on a bunch of other free agents and didn't have to spend that money elsewhere, and they kind of had some free money to be able to pay Lawler. So for as good as Geno Lewis is, I don't necessarily think he can get that kind of money, but it's what he wants, and I don't blame him because I think he is arguably one of the best receivers in the CFL.
Would he not be a perfect fit for the Red Blacks?
It could be a possibility, but I don't know if he would fit into the culture there that Sean Burke and Bob Dice are building, right? Because of some of the things that he's dropped on Twitter and how vocal he's been. And Geno Lewis is actually an interesting case because he did have an agent for his first handful of deals in the CFL, and now he doesn't have an agent. He's representing himself. So he has had multiple one-on-one meetings in person with Danny Machocci because he's still in Montreal at this moment. But I don't necessarily see a fit with the Red Blacks at that kind of a price tag. I think we'd have to come down closer to the $200,000 range if he was going to be in Ottawa.
With Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation, and you guys have been writing about various free agent topics and ranking guys that are available, et cetera, for weeks now. In terms of the Red Blacks, and they've signed a number of their own free agents, Justin, but still several that are unsigned and maybe they're going to move on from. Is there a guy or two that are on your list from other teams that you think would be good fits and that you've heard or you think the Red Blacks would be interested in?
That's a great question. I think first and foremost for the Red Blacks, they got to figure out the backup quarterback position. Caleb Evans is a free agent. Nick Arbuckle is a free agent. of their own. There are some people that feel like maybe Dane Evans could come down the highway and be a backup there, but I think that's a long ways towards being figured out, because if Trevor Harris stays in Montreal, then I think the Rough Riders would really want to go after Dane Evans, and Evans is going to want a chance to start, which he's not going to get in Ottawa. So I think first and foremost, they're going to figure out that backup quarterback position, because it's so important, and I think a guy like Nick Arbuckle could make some sense in staying there. Caleb Evans had some flashes, but both those guys are probably going to want raises or at least be paid with some bonus incentives if they got the chance to play, if Jeremiah Masoli got hurt again. But outside of that, you can see that offensive line has been made a priority. Last year it wasn't free agency. Drew Desjarlais, they go out and spend big money on, and I think that means that they're going to move on from Darius Sirocco and Hunter Stewart and essentially just move that money over to Desjarlais. So then I think it turns to looking at a playmaker. And you brought up Geno Lewis before, and I don't necessarily know if that's the guy that fits the mold, but I think they're going to want to look to add some playmakers around Jeremiah Masoli and potentially get better at pass rusher. Now, part of the reason why last year they maybe weren't as good is because Kwaku Boateng was out with an injury the entire year, one of their big free agent acquisitions. So I think they'll check in on his health, but I think they could look at a pass rushing group that has some intriguing options. And if you look at a guy like Calgary Stampeders pending free agent Florian Ormalade, he could be a guy that's really intriguing, although I think he's probably headed to Toronto in that pipeline of Stampeders former players that are making their way to the Argonauts. But there are some intriguing talents at pass rusher available, and I think Ottawa could look at that as well.
What do you think of Desjarlais as far as a player, the contract, and I guess how he'll fit here in Ottawa?
First of all, as a player, the dude is an absolute mauler, and people around the league will tell you that he is the best offensive lineman in the league, regardless of his passport. It doesn't matter that he's Canadian. So that's a bonus from the ratio perspective. And I actually like the contract, even though some people feel like it's overpaying for an offensive lineman, because of the reason that I just said. Darius Sirocco won't be back. Neither will Hunter Stewart. They have Cyril Hogan, Sando, that will start at center, who's on a rookie contract. So that allows you to pay Desjarlais this type of money for a couple of years, guys. And it's the money that he was commanding around the league. He turned down more money from other teams to sign with the Red Blacks because he felt like he was wanted there. He likes what they're building. He actually got to meet Jeremiah Masoli as part of the recruiting that the Red Blacks put on. So I think he's really in on what Sean Burke is doing there. So overall, I really like the signing. Great high-end player. He's in his mid-20s. So much of great quality football left in him. And you paid him well, but you didn't necessarily pay him what other people were offering. So I think that speaks to what the Red Blacks are doing in terms of recruiting players and how they're viewed, despite their record a year ago, in this upward trajectory under Sean Burke and Bob Dice.
Well, after three really bad seasons, we're ready for some better football here in Ottawa for sure. Montreal appears to be a bit of a gong show. Hamilton has gone, has had the talent. They've gone with Bo Levi Mitchell. Interesting that the defending Grey Cup champion Argonauts have some, well, all teams. They always have a million free agents every year, Justin, because of the way the free agency works. But they've got huge questions at quarterback. From what I read, and you can correct me, McLeod Bethel-Thompson's still kind of weighing his options as to whether he wants to retire or not. And then you've got Chad Kelly, who we saw in the Grey Cup game, but is he ready to be a full-time starter? And we all know, I mean, you can't win the CFL. You don't have any quarterbacking. So what's going to happen, do you believe, with the Argonauts and the quarterback position?
That situation with Thompson is still up in the air, and I think he's going to take his time with it. I don't think he's going to feel rushed by free agency in that February 14th date, even though ideally from an Argonauts management perspective, they're going to want to have some sort of an idea, but I think it's very much still up in the air. And, you know, at some point there's going to have to be a decision made by the Argos. And if they do go with Chad Kelly, they're going to want to have a veteran there to either compete with Kelly or back him up to help him along the way. Because I think that's part of the reason why Chad Kelly was able to look so good so quickly, is he was able to be around McLeod Bethel-Thompson. So I've been monitoring that situation with Macbeth, as he's known throughout the league. And I am one of the people that think that if Chad Kelly is given the reins there in Toronto, that he could play well, that he could actually potentially, dare I say, boost interest in the Argos in Toronto, which we all know isn't very much. It could certainly be higher. And we see that from the traffic on Three Down Nation. Anytime we write about Chad Kelly, the pieces are very well read due to the relationship. He's a nephew of Jim Kelly, of course, was a Hall of Fame quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. So that's a situation to monitor, because I think we'll get an idea. If they don't get an answer from McLeod Bethel Thompson by free agency, then they could go looking for a veteran or another quarterback to bring in with Chad Kelly.
With the instability in the East, could we see a scenario, if this goes properly, or from what you've already seen with the Red Blacks, both with staff and players, where they could go from worst to first?
We've seen it before, and I think the Red Blacks would be one of those teams that could pull it off. Right? There's some stability in the coaching staff now. They've been with these players at least through the end of the season, and you're going to bring in Kahari Jones. I think he'll get on the same page quickly with Jeremiah Masoli. And Masoli in particular showed that he could learn a new offense very quickly last year and come out absolutely firing. So I think the key for the Red Blacks this year is going to be finish, especially early in the season when Masoli was healthy. They were in those ball games, and it's one thing to compete, but ultimately you're judged by wins and losses. So they're going to have to finish with wins. And I think there is a possibility, because the East is in so much flux. That said, the Argos are the two-time defending East Division champions, at least in the regular season. So I think you got to take that title away from them before you start thinking about going worst to first.
All right, good stuff. CFL free agency starts officially on Valentine's Day, but legal tampering begins Sunday at noon. Justin Dunk will be all over it as part of Three Down Nation. You can find his work at threedownnation.com. Really always appreciate the time and the insight, Justin, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again down the road.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Justin Dunk on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. All right, we'll take a break. 9:36. We'll come back, get to more of your reaction to the big news Senator-related this morning, and that was the firing of Troy Mann as the head coach of the Belleville Senators. That happened late last night. Lots of reaction pouring in on that. Should mention, Steve Lloyd just texted me that Sens All-Star Brady Tkachuk is going to be phoning in from down in Florida, where he'll be part, of course, of All-Star Weekend, repping the Sens. He'll be joining he and Brad Fritch, who co-hosts today at about 10:15. So we'll look forward to hearing from the Sens captain in a little over a half hour right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Necessarily a big Jameson guy. Hammer, you are. Is this a good day to have the Jameson sink in?
Oh, my heavens, yes. A few Jameson.
Like, is this, like, in terms of what's going on outside right now, of all days, is this the optimal day?
You could have two Jameson, step outside, and not feel a thing.
You could shovel your driveway.
You've had too many.
You could just shovel it within jean shorts. You wouldn't even need anything else on.
It's just because it warms you up so much. Like, if you haven't had a hug in a while, have a Jameson. Boy, that's a marketing right there.
Some people even use it as
a hug.
Some people even use it as a car starter. You just put it right in, if the engine's not fired up, JR. Just put a little of that in the tank.
Oh, it's so delicious.
Rev high.
There we go.
There you go.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 9:45. Thanks then to Justin Dunk for joining us from Three Down Nation. CFL free agency begins on Sunday. Could be an interesting afternoon and evening to keep track of, and into next week as teams can start talking to other teams' free agents. Okay, more on the Troy Mann thing and more your reaction in just a second. And as mentioned, Brady Tkachuk will join Steve Lloyd and Brad Fritch, who will co-host it today on In the Box at about 10:15. So we got to make sure we're off around on time, you guys. Come on.
Yes, Simmer.
Okay, we got to give away our Sens Wings tickets for the game on February 28th at Canadian Tire Center. It's a four-pack of tickets. You're going to be texting us with your frozen hands the correct answer to 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. So your first and last name. And I'm going to make it easy because it's a Friday. There are three options as far as an answer goes. I only need one of them. And I hope I asked this question correctly. And I hope I have the answers correct, because I was doing research in the last couple of breaks. But I think I'm right. All right? We're talking Detroit and Ottawa. Of course, who's the name that is synonymous with both cities in terms of hockey, etc.? Steve Yzerman. Right, Simmer?
Absolutely.
Steve Yzerman. Yeah. Of course, played his entire career with the Detroit Red Wings. Front-to-back, NHL career front-to-back. Only three players in NHL history have played more games than Steve Yzerman and played with only one franchise.
Oh, wow.
Only three players in NHL history have played more games than Steve Yzerman and only played for one franchise, one NHL franchise. I only need the name of one of them. One of the three. Okay? Text us at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Your first and last name and one of the answers. Okay?
I wish we could play this. I don't like that. That's
before we give the correct answer, okay. You'll have a chance.
Okay.
Because there are, let me have a look here. Hang on. There are 20 NHLers or players who played more games in the NHL than Steve Yzerman, but only three of them played for one franchise.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. A
couple of them I had to look and say, that's right. Okay. Anyway. All right. So we'll do that before 10 o'clock. Okay. Let's get to some of the reaction again. Lots pouring in about the Troy Mann decision again. Troy Mann fired after the game last night with Belleville by the Sens. The statement reading in part from assistant general manager of the Ottawa Senators and BSens GM Ryan Bonus, quote, the short and long-term growth of the players, as well as the cohesion and systematic play between Ottawa and Belleville. That was why they felt the move was necessary. GM Pierre Dorion saying in the statement, they said it was necessary to deliver, quote, improved team performance. Belleville right now, despite a rash of injuries and call-ups, is 17 wins in 43 games, but they are only 4 points out of the final playoff spot in the HL's Northern Division. All right, more reaction. So we've had some hypotheticals as to why this may happen.
Yeah.
From Ryan and Stittsville. On the Coming In Hot podcast, we played a couple, and again, they had Troy Mann on Tuesday on the pod. Mm-hmm. Mann said the following. He insinuates that he projects Ridly Gregg as potentially a third-line center, that he worries he's too small, and said what the medical staff timeline plan is for his weight, that he only watches video every few days, whereas other prospects watch every day because he's laid back and quiet. Is that a normal thing to say coming from the coach, especially when Dorion is potentially trying to use prospects like Gregg in trades? That's from Ryan in Stittsville.
Ryan, I didn't hear exactly that, Jer, if that's the case.
I did hear that part, so that is pretty accurate.
As I said, I don't really see any reason why your coach would be saying that.
Context.
Okay.
He wasn't
okay.
saying it in a critical way, and he's saying basically what you and others have said, that your one worry about Ridly Gregg is that he plays a big man's game and a medium size. Is he going to be big enough to hold up? Yeah. And they're trying to get his point was they're trying to get his weight up. He's at 180 this year. They want to get him to 190. So I don't think he said anything that insinuates in any way that, you know, that this guy, you know, wouldn't be a good guy to acquire in a trade.
No, but at the same time, Jared, like, he doesn't need to confirm what I think or other people think. And it kind of goes back to what we talked in the first hour. I think he's done a hell of a job, but in giving opinions or information, I don't see any need for him to be saying some of those things, but I'd have to hear the whole part of it. And as far as the projection, that surprises me, but I'm not looking at that as a negative.
He had said second. I want to be accurate in this because the texture wasn't completely accurate.
Okay.
My memory of what he said essentially was if he's a third line, if he's a second line center on Ottawa, you know, that's fantastic, but it's also good if he's a third line.
Okay.
So it wasn't like he's a third line.
Yeah.
He did not say that, to be accurate.
Yeah. And, you know, again, all of that as far as the voice, or this would also be, and, you know, for a long time coming on with Lloydy, it wasn't like this is something that's a one-off of him going on that podcast here. Or I guess he didn't deviate away from what we always appreciated was he was incredibly honest. One of the nice parts, and as I said, Logan Brown is probably the one example, JR, where we could all read between. One of the nice things that he's dealt with is a lot of players that I don't got to get on the horn and be BSing, right? I just can be honest about, hey, this is where he's at and this is where he's going. And that's not always easy to end up doing, but they've had a nice run there and he's done an excellent job along with some excellent drafting.
This text comes from Cam. The only players he's saying the royal we there, haven't developed our defensemen. Although every time we called a guy up from Belleville, be it Lassie or JBD or even Hetherington, they play great at first, and then after about 2 weeks with DJ, they look lost and confused. Something stinks. Hopefully we don't see any weird, desperate moves on the player side before the sale goes through. That's from Cam.
Yeah, Cam, when I look at this, and again, when you see what is put out, those statements from watching Belleville, from first of all, whether you want to get into kind of being on the same, hey, Belleville is a very well-coached team, very well-respected. Development of prospects has been absolutely excellent. I do not recall any circumstance or situation of a player not liking it in Belleville or feeling like, ah, coach doesn't want me to make it. You know, you have this great thing about Elias Anderson, you know, and how many times has Rangers had guys on their farm team that don't want to be there? Now, that could be organization-related, JR, but when you look at that, and along with the record that they have this year, that's really in correlation with not very good goaltending, a lot of injuries, and not the deepest team. So I'm not buying anything of what was put out in the statement, to be quite honest with you, because in the entire body of work that I've looked at, that is quite simply is not accurate.
Received a text from someone who has a connection to someone who played for Troy Mann, said that he was one of the best coaches that he's ever played for. And this is someone that's played for a number of coaches at the minor pro level and junior, et cetera. So take that for what it's worth.
And I've never heard anything but good things, Jared. I mean, that sincerely. Like, I've never heard anything other than, and it's not an easy job. And like I said, I speak from so much experience because, my God, I had, of all people, a Hockey Hall of Famer and Brian Trotsche come down in the middle of his kind of end of his career, JR, to want to coach in the American League. Well, my oh my, when Brian realized that he needed to put in the time in the American League to maybe get an NHL coaching job, it only took about a month of being on the buses that he realized, you know what, this isn't really for me. And when we started to struggle, he really took it more of, man, I can't be on a losing part of a losing team here. I guess to my point, you have to almost park your ego at times, recognizing that, hey, it can't necessarily be all about the coach. Your job is to be there and develop. And for someone to want to stay in place, it's an interesting thing. And I just feel like the way this has worked with the Mann brothers, in particular Mann, and obviously he has not had a chance to coach in the National Hockey League. Otherwise, there's a good chance he'd be gone. But you still have to continue every day of, hey, what am I here for? I'm here to develop players for the Ottawa Senators. And I have always said, I think the Ottawa Senators drafting and development might be the very best, or certainly in the top five, JR. I just think they fired in all cylinders. That also goes to Sean Donovan and the entire department, but I just looked at that and thought, man, and let's be honest, like, where would the rebuild be without the draft and development side that is led by the Mann brothers?
Okay, so I'm just, I want to follow up on something because a bunch of people are texting me that, okay, so Clara Hanna, who covers the Ottawa Senators, of course, for TSN, has just tweeted out in the last few minutes that this is a direct quote from her tweet. Sources are saying there were trust issues emerging between the Sens and Troy Mann. I'm told the straw that broke the camel's back was when Mann gave some of the Sens pre-scouting material to another NHL team. That is, okay, that's interesting, if true. And Claire's reporting it, so she's a great reporter. So there you go.
No comment?
Mann gave some of the Sens pre-scouting material. Okay. Anyway. Okay. You have no comment, as in, potential? I mean,
well, you'd never.
I'll base it on your previous history. Would that be something that might have happened before? With other coaches, with other organizations?
No, not at all. No,
this would be very unusual if true.
If a coach did that, you don't do that, Jared. Again, I'm not saying this is rocket science, but you if you were to ever, again, cross a line like that, but I guess I'd also, in the way the press release was done, that would be almost fire with cause, to be quite honest with you. I mean, if that was to, and how that's interpreted. Now, do coaches call all around? Like, you'll have, say from the American League standpoint, JR, you'll have coaches that you're friendly with, and if they've played a team, you may call before, right? And the National Hockey League, kind of the same thing. But if any organization reached out and said, hey, what do you want to break? I'm taking this as interpretation that he gave information based on the Ottawa Senators, not the B-Sens, right? That he was asked.
It says the Ottawa Senators pre-scout.
Yeah, so if that was the case, that's not good. And as I said, that's not that to me would be, you don't do something like that. Now, you have conversations that can be quite honest at times about maybe players or different things, but that type of a line, that's not a good thing if that's the case. And that's obviously, somebody must feel it's important to get that message out there. You know what I mean? As I say, I think, I wonder if they, I assume they realized last night that this was going to be a crap storm. But now when this circles out at 9:56 that morning of, via somebody else through the media. Quite interesting.
Yeah, that maybe it blew up a little bit bigger than they thought that it would. And it's like, but anyway, you can, so Claire Hanna from TSN has tweeted that out here in the last few minutes. Okay. Yeah. So we'll endeavor to find out more information on that, but certainly a very, what you thought would be a nice quiet all-star weekend.
Well, and here's to the organization, JR. Like, if that's the case, I personally believe that somebody should be relieved of their duties. I don't believe in that type of thing. I think you've really crossed the line. Now, how you handle that, though, and I know it can be delicate and depending, but if you've confronted the coach and he has actually said this to be the case, well, I think you could have altered or not put out kind of the spin in the press release, JR, right?
Yes.
It would have just been more, hey, we've decided to part ways, be no further comment.
Mm.
The rest of the spin within that itself just led to things that are quite simply accurate. Like, nobody in hockey has looked at the team and said, well, structurally they want to play different or for the betterment of our development or we need to win more games.
That's why it's been a topic for 4 hours on the show, is that what they said in the statement and the reality that all of us can see or what we perceive to be the reality, that the two don't meet.
No, and 12 hours later, this is now coming at a completely different angle. And I'll also say it better be super accurate as well.
Yeah. Yes. All right, we'll turn it over to Steve Lloyd to take over. Here, Lloydy, here's the baton. Be yours to hold it high. Okay, do we have a winner?
Does Simmer want to quickly play the game to your question?
Yes,
we have a winner.
Okay, all right.
So they have to be retired, though, right, Jer? Or they can still be active?
What's your answer? Okay, let me ask the question again. I got to find, hang on.
But the three players you're talking about, are they all retired?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool.
Iserman has synonymous with Detroit and Ottawa, of course, played his entire career with the Red Wings, 1,514 career games.
Yeah.
Only three players who have played more games in the NHL and only played for one franchise.
Okay.
20 players have played more games, but only three were with one franchise for their entire career. I only needed the name of one of them.
Okay.
Took it easy on everybody. Yeah. All right, so what's your guess?
I was going to go with Nick Lidstrom.
Nick Lidstrom is correct. In fact, he is number one at 1,564. He played 50 more games in Iserman.
And then I'm going to go all the way to the West Coast, and I'm going to go a little Dave Taylor action.
Dave Taylor is not correct. I'd have to look at how many games that Dave Taylor played.
Okay.
I'm looking down, way down, way down. I can't find him. It's too far down my list.
And then I'm out because I was going to, I don't have anything else.
You needed to look west and south. Actually, you needed to look west in Canada and then looked eventually south. That's why I said franchise. Okay. Shane Doan.
Okay, wow. Okay.
Shane Doan played
with Winnipeg and Arizona.
26 more games than Steve Iserman did. And the other is an old-timey name that old-time hockey fans will know, and that's Alex Delvecchio, also with Detroit.
Cool.
Played his entire. But, like Gordie Howe played with Hartford in the NHL.
Oh,
he
jeepers,
has the most games.
Patrick
Marleau actually did play the most games. Yeah. Sorry, he, of course, played for Toronto and for Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Joe Thornton is on, Jagr, Messier,
Zdeno
Chara, Recchi. They all played for at least two teams, if not more.
Even Dave Andrechuk, Eagle.
Yep, there you go. All right, who's our winner?
Burke Buin, who also went with Nicholas Lidstrom.
Yes, he actually had the most. Congratulations. Is it Burke?
Burke Buin.
All right, nice job, Burke. You're on your way to the Sens game to see them play Detroit February 28th at Canadian Tire Center.